Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review. It is September 14th, 2020, and we will begin on the front page with the article headlined Parade of Honor. COVID alters course of charity car cruise, but not its commitment. Tony Reed writes from Forsyth, when the COVID-19 pandemic pulled up next to the Cruise 11 to Remember 9/11, the charity car show had to radically switch lanes, but never swerved in its sense of honor and commitment to the nation's first responders. And with crowd limits and social distancing rules in place, Sunday's 12th Cruise 11 bypassed the car show and opted only for a celebratory vehicle parade instead. Dozens of vehicles ranging from classic police cruisers to hot rods and 90-year-old vintage automobiles met in Forsyth before forming a convoy and setting off for Decatur. They cruised around Decatur Memorial Hospital, Fire Station No. 1, the Macon County Sheriff's Office, and Decatur Police Department and HSHS. In a dramatic thank you to those charged with keeping us safe and healthy. The final stop, added to the last moment after requests from his friends, was a cruise past the home on Dickinson Street of World War II veteran and retired firefighter Bob Corey. I was told that Bob and his wife would enjoy seeing the cars, so why not, said cruise 9/11 organizer Ayn Owens. She said the arrival of COVID had threatened to be a major disruption, but was feeling pleased Sunday with the way the reorganized event had turned out and the willingness of car and motorcycle owners to participate. We had to be creative out of the box in creating a car parade instead of what we usually do, she added. One arresting member of Sunday's cruise was the immaculate 1982 Ford LTD Chicago Police Squad Car, owned and restored by Michael Tarzan, an investigator with the Macon County Public Defender's Office. He paid $600 for the Prowl car 12 years ago and invested more than $10,000 and countless hours of sweat equity, turning the rusted-out wreck into a gleaming showpiece complete with authentic lights, logos, and white and blue paint job. I like old vehicles, and some of them just scream at you, save me, help me, and this was one of those, said Tarzan, who was accompanied by his son and fellow car fan, 11-year-old Joe. Both wanted to take part on Sunday and use their love of classic Americana vehicles to salute their country and those tasked with looking after it. I get sick of all the negative stuff I see lately on the news and on social media, said Michael Tarzan. People need to start coming together. This is America, for crying out loud, and we need to show more love and support, especially to our first responders. So we're glad to be here and be part of this. And there are photographs that accompany this article. One shows David Williams, who took part in Sunday's Cruise 11 to Remember 9/11 car parade, with his 1930 Model A Ford, a classic he inherited from his firefighter father, who sometimes drove it to work. And there's also a photograph of Michael Tarzan and his 11-year-old son Joe showing off their 1982 Chicago Prowl car. And Michael Tarzan said they were proud to take part in a parade honoring first responders. There's also a photograph of Norma Jean and Bob Corey waving to the cars driving by their house along the revised route of the Cruise 11 to Remember 9/11 event. Bob Corey is a World War II and Korean War veteran. And next, police chief to talk with council, gets to give update on department, speak on gun violence spike. from Decatur. The Decatur City Council on Monday is scheduled to have a study session to talk about the police department, efforts to modernize the agency, and what's being done to address gun violence. In a memo to the council, City Manager Scott Wrighton and Police Chief James Goetz said the department for years has been dedicated to improving training, community outreach, and operations. More recently, police brutality incidents in Minneapolis and other American cities have placed a spotlight on the means and methods deployed by local police departments to provide basic security services to their citizens in ways that are compatible with the country's motto of equal justice under the law, the memo reads. On the agenda is a discussion about technology as well as new officer-worn body cameras that will start in October. Additionally, beginning in 2021, the city will begin deployment of surveillance camera equipment in selected neighborhoods to test out their effectiveness in reducing all kinds of crime, according to the memo. Goetz on Monday is also expected to talk about strategies to address a spike in shootings. Although not unique to Decatur, there has been an unacceptable increase in gun violence in Decatur in recent months, the memo says. The study session is used by the council to discuss policies. No votes are taken. The session is at 5:30 p.m. at the Civic Center Theater, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. And continuing from the front page, Western wildfires, wind a worry as death toll hits 33. Nearly all the dozens of people reported missing after a devastating blaze in southern Oregon have been accounted for, authorities said over the weekend, as crews battled wildfires that have killed at least 33 from California to Washington state. The flames up and down the West Coast have destroyed neighborhoods, leaving nothing but charred rubble and burned-out cars, forced tens of thousands to flee, and cast a shroud of smoke that has given Seattle, San Francisco, and Portland, Oregon some of the worst air quality in the world. The smoke filled the air with an acrid metallic smell like pennies and spread to nearby states. While making it difficult to breathe, it helped firefighters by blocking the sun and turning the weather cooler as they tried to get a handle on the blazes, which were slowing in some places. But warnings of low moisture and strong winds that could fan the flames added urgency to the battle. The so-called red flag warnings stretched from hard-hit southern Oregon to northern California and extended through Monday evening. Lexi Sulios, her husband and son, were afraid they would have to evacuate for a second time because of the weather. They left their small southern Oregon town of Talent last week when they saw a big, huge flow of dark smoke coming up. They went past roadblocks Friday to pick through the charred ruins of their home. While they are staying farther south in Ashland, known for the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, she said by text message that the forecast may mean they could be on the move again. "So this isn't over yet, but we just had the car checked, so we feel prepared," Lexi Sulios wrote. Authorities last week reported as many as 50 people could be missing after a wildfire in the Ashland area. But the Jackson County Sheriff's Office said late Saturday that 4 people had died in the blaze and that the number of missing was down to 1. At least 10 people have been killed in the past week throughout Oregon. Officials have said more people are missing from other fires, and the number of fatalities is likely to rise, though they have not said how high the toll could go as they search. In California, 22 people have died, and 1 in Washington state. Thousands of homes and other buildings have been burned. Barbara Rose Bettison, 25, left her farm among the trees and fields of Eagle Creek outside Portland when a sheriff's deputy knocked on her door Tuesday. They drove away on a road that became an ominous dividing line, with blue skies on one side and the other filled with black and brown smoke. She took shelter at an Elks Lodge near Portland, where evacuees wrapped themselves in blankets and set up tents out back. "It's terrifying. We've never had any form of natural disaster," she said. Bettison, a UPS driver, was able to get out with her chickens, rabbits, and cats. She hasn't been back, but neighbors said it is so smoky they can't see their hands in front of their faces. "I'm hoping there has not been too much damage, because it would break my heart," she said. Farther south in the town of Talent, Dave Monroe came to his burned home, partially hoping he'd find his three cats. "We thought we'd get out of this summer with no fires," he said. "There is something going on, that's for sure, man. Every summer we're burning up." Numerous studies in recent years have linked bigger wildfires in the U.S. to global warming from the burning coal, oil, and gas. The Democratic governors of all three states say the fires are a consequence of climate change, taking aim at President Donald Trump ahead of his visit Monday to California for a fire briefing. "It is maddening right now that when we have this cosmic challenge to our communities, with the entire West Coast of the United States on fire, to have a president deny that these are not just wildfires, these are climate fires," Washington Governor Jay Inslee said Sunday on ABC's This Week. Firefighter Steve McAdoo has run from one blaze to another in Oregon for 6 days, seeing buildings burn and trees light up like candles. "We lost track of time because you can't see the sun, and you've been up for so many days," he said. 48 to 72 hours nonstop. You feel like you're in a dream." As he and his team battled the blazes, McAdoo worried about his wife and daughter at home, just miles away. They evacuated safely, but at times he could communicate with them only in one-word text messages. Busy. McAdoo and other firefighters got their first real break Sunday to take showers, shave, and check their equipment. And though it's a faint shadow of its usual self, he can finally see the sun. "It's nice today to at least see the dot in the sky," he said. Meanwhile, Oregon's fire marshal, who resigned after being placed on leave amid a personal investigation, says he was trying to help a colleague and didn't do anything wrong. And moving to the local and state page, the COVID report: Macon County sees 36th death. The death of another Macon County resident has been attributed to COVID-19, health officials said. The announcement Sunday by the health department brings the county's death toll to 36. Officials also announced 17 new cases. To date, there have been 1,227 confirmed cases. Of those, 704 have been released from isolation, 477 are isolating at home, and 10 are hospitalized. The Illinois Department of Public Health on Sunday announced 1,462 new confirmed cases of coronavirus disease and 14 additional confirmed cases. 14 additional confirmed deaths. To date, the state is reporting a total of 261,371 cases, including 8,309 deaths. And next, man seeking to lower his bond. Stone accused of sexually assaulting girl under age 13. From Decatur. Dion A. Stone, a Decatur man pleading not guilty to multiple charges of sexually assaulting a girl under age 13, will appear in court September 23rd in a bid to get his $300,000 bail reduced. Stone, 43, is being held in the Macon County Jail and faces three counts of predatory criminal sexual assault and three counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Stone appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on September 9th with his defense attorney, Steve Jones, and waived his right to a preliminary hearing. His current bail amount means he would have to post a $30,000 to be released. A Decatur police sworn affidavit about the case said Stone was arrested August 11th after detectives received a complaint from the girl's mother, saying her daughter had been a sexual assault victim. When police later interviewed the child, she told them she had been repeatedly assaulted when left alone with Stone, who, in one incident, was caught in the act when the child's mother came home early from work. The child told police she had also tried to gather her own evidence against him. The sworn affidavit describes how she had set up her school-issued iPad to video one of the assaults, but Stone discovered the machine hidden in a bedroom dirty clothes hamper. The girl said she ended up in tears after Stone smashed the iPad to try and destroy the recording. The affidavit said police were later able to download images supporting the girl's version of events. The affidavit said Stone can be heard asking the child three times on the video if he was being recorded. The female voice responds, "Yep, I'm telling my mom," the affidavit adds. And next, Rantoul gets to keep its iconic Cold War missile. Shimkus convinces Air Force to let it stay in Central Illinois. A Central Illinois community that was facing the impending loss of its iconic Minuteman missile can keep the Cold War relic under a last-minute arrangement with the Air Force. 3 days before the planned dismantling of Rantoul's first-generation Minuteman missile, Mayor Chuck Smith announced Friday that the Air Force will hand over upkeep of the missile to the village. After the missile is renovated, it will then be transferred back to the National Museum of the Air Force and loaned to the village, the News Gazette reported. The Air Force had previously held that the village would not be allowed to maintain the missile, and it was scheduled to dismantle it on Monday. But U.S. Representative John Shimkus, Republican of Illinois, and an aide were able to convince the Air Force to change its mind. "It's the Rantoul rocket. We've got to do this," Shimkus said as he told an Air Force colonel who then began making calls. The missile was installed at the west entrance of the former Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul in 1966. It had remained in place after the Air Force closed the base in 1993. Rantoul VFW Commander Justin Penrod said he was ecstatic that the missile won't be scrapped. "Now we've just got to move forward and start getting people interested to push for a landmark and see if we can get the federal funding to preserve it. I'm glad they listened to us," he said. And next, lock of Abraham Lincoln's hair sells for over $81,000. A lock of Abraham Lincoln's hair, along with a blood-stained telegram about his 1865 assassination, have been sold at auction for more than $81,000. The items were sold during an auction that ended Saturday, according to no information about the buyer was disclosed. The roughly 2-inch-long lock of hair was removed during Lincoln's post-mortem examination after he was fatally shot at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. by John Wilkes Booth. It was presented to Dr. Lyman Beecher Todd, a Kentucky postmaster and a cousin of Mary Todd Lincoln, the 16th president's widow, according to RR Auction. Dr. Todd was present when Lincoln's body was examined. The hair is mounted on an official War Department telegram sent to Dr. Todd by George Kinnear, his assistant in the Lexington, Kentucky post office. The telegram was received in Washington at 11 p.m. on April 14, 1865. R.R. Auction vouched for the authenticity of the lock and telegram. Dr. Todd's son, James Todd, wrote in a 1945 letter that the clipping of hair has remained entirely in the custody of our family since that time. It was last sold in 1999, the auction house said. When you are dealing with samples of Lincoln's hair, provenance is everything. And in this case, we know that this came from a family member who was at the president's bedside, Bobby Livingston, R.R. Auction's executive vice president, said in a statement. The $81,250 selling price was slightly more than the $75,000 the auction house was hoping the item would fetch. The telegram is significant because it disproved a theory that then Secretary of War Edward Stanton plotted to kill Lincoln because of their personal and political differences, according to historians. Some people said Stanton ordered military communications to be disrupted, allowing Booth to briefly escape. The timestamp on the dispatch shows that military telegraph lines were functioning on the night Lincoln was assassinated. And continuing on the local page, Red Cross volunteers to assist with wildfire relief. Last week, volunteer Dean Otta was preparing a Red Cross emergency response vehicle for a trip to Louisiana. On Sunday, he left Decatur with Kirk Edgecombe en route to Portland, Oregon, to assist with wildfire relief efforts. Once in Portland, the duo will distribute supplies such as food, water, and snacks, and cleanup kits, the Red Cross said in a news release. Another team of volunteers from the Illinois region will be leaving Monday from Moline. Officials said a total of 4 emergency response vehicles from the Illinois region have been deployed to help with relief efforts in Oregon. Officials said there are 52 volunteers from the Illinois region deployed to help with disasters across the country, including Texas, Louisiana, and Oregon, officials said. Volunteers Donna Gake and Anita Zekin left the Decatur office last weekend en route to assist with Hurricane Laura relief efforts in Louisiana. And from the Almanac, today's highlight in history, September 14, 1901, President William McKinley died in Buffalo, New York, of gunshot wounds inflicted by an assassin. Vice President Theodore Roosevelt succeeded him. Also on September 14th, in 1715, Benedictine monk Dom Pierre Perignon, credited with advances in the production of champagne, died in Hauteville, France, at age 76. In 1814, Francis Scott Key was inspired to write the poem Defense of Fort McHenry, later the Star-Spangled Banner, after witnessing the American flag flying over the Maryland fort following a night of British naval bombardment during the War of 1812. In 1847, during the Mexican-American War, U.S. forces under General Winfield Scott took control of Mexico City. In 1863, Marianne Fisher of Aberdeen, South Dakota, gave birth to 4 girls and a boy, the first known surviving quintuplets in the United States. In 1972, the family drama The Waltons premiered on CBS. In 1982, Princess Grace of Monaco, formerly film star Grace Kelly, died at age 52 of injuries from a car crash the day before. Lebanon's president-elect, Bashir Gemayel, was killed by a bomb. In 1994, on the 34th day of a strike by players, acting baseball commissioner Bud Selig announced the 1994 season was over. In 2001, Americans packed churches and clogged public squares on a day of remembrance for the victims of the September 11th attacks. President George W. Bush prayed with his cabinet and attended services at Washington National Cathedral, then flew to New York, where he waded into the ruins of the World Trade Center and addressed rescue workers in a flag-waving, bullhorn-wielding show of resolve. In 2010, Sarah Shord, one of three American hikers detained by Iran, was freed on $500,000 bail after 410 days in prison. Reggie Bush announced he was forfeiting his 2005 Heisman title, citing a scandal over improper benefits while he was a star running back at Southern California. It was the first time college football's top award had been relinquished by a recipient. In 2012, fury over an anti-Muslim film ridiculing the Prophet Muhammad spread across the Muslim world, with deadly clashes near Western embassies in Tunisia and Sudan, an American fast food restaurant set ablaze in Lebanon, and international peacekeepers attacked in the Sinai. In 2015, Ahmed Mohammed, a 14-year-old Muslim boy, was arrested after bringing a homemade clock to MacArthur High School in Irving, Texas, that was mistaken for a possible bomb. Police declined to seek any charges. Rowan County, Kentucky clerk Kim Davis returned to work for the first time since she was jailed for defying a federal court and announced that she would no longer block her deputies from issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump renewed his campaign against illegal immigration, telling a cheering crowd of thousands in Dallas that it's disgusting what's happening to our country. In 2019, the White House announced that Hamza bin Laden, a son of the late Al-Qaeda leader, had been killed in a U.S. counterterrorism operation in the Afghanistan-Pakistan region. He'd become an increasingly prominent figure in Al-Qaeda. Drone attacks on the world's largest oil processing facility in Saudi Arabia and a major oil field sparked huge fires and halted about half the supplies from the world's largest exporter of oil. The Trump administration blamed Iran for the attacks. And next, brick thrown through door of business, police report. A brick thrown through the window of an automotive business is being treated as a case of criminal damage by Decatur police. Sergeant Sean Gunther said Donnelly Automotive Machine at 1298 East El Dorado Street was attacked sometime between 6 p.m. Friday and 7 a.m. Saturday when the damage was discovered. A half brick was located lying on the floor of the center aisle of the business, said Gunther. It had been thrown through the right front glass door of the entrance. Gunther said a representative of the business estimated the damage would cost around $500 to fix. There was no report of anything stolen. And finally, Charleston man hospitalized after motorcycle crash. A 47-year-old Charleston man was hospitalized Saturday following a Douglas County crash. The Illinois State Police, in a statement, said he was on a 2019 Suzuki motorcycle northbound on Route 130 when a 2003 Dodge Ram driven by a 44-year-old man from Camargo turned left on 850 North Road. The motorcycle crashed into the truck, throwing the driver from the bike, police said. And this ends our first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for September 14th, 2020. We'll take a short break now, and I will return with the next half hour of our reading today. Please stay tuned.